Hello, everyone, and welcome to Vanished Chicagoland Stories, the podcast. I'm your host, Pete Costanis, and this is episode 30, the Big 3-0 season 2. And today is a Father's Day episode, and we will be talking about other things besides Father's Day. And right now here, this program is brought to you by Zaire. And here is a Father's Day commercial from the 1980s.
Daddy wants a drill for Father's Day,
but we better get the right one.
We better call for help.
We'd like to really be part of your family. We'd like to make Zaire your store. Come along and say that Zaire.
What's the best drill in the house?
We're gonna show you we care.
Do your dry cleaning too.
We'd like to make Zaire your store.
Now Dad could build me a go-kart. Your dad.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, I am back. I hope you enjoyed that commercial from Zaire. A lot of people in the old days remember Zaire discount stores. They were all over the Chicagoland area. And my mother shopped there all the time when I was growing up. And the most well-known that was on the south side was located on West Columbus Avenue in the Ashburn neighborhood, right near Western Avenue. And it was in a plaza, and the next door was a Wiseway Foods store. And of course, let's see, what else was there? Oh, and the Double Drive-In was about a little up, you know, it's right next door to it. And all those places are gone now. So it was a fun time. And Zaire was in the Chicagoland area about in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s. It went out of business probably early 90s. So it was still remembered to this day. And the commercials, if you want to see the commercials, you can check them out on YouTube. You know, there's a lot of them, so especially Christmas ones. So those are fun. Today is Father's Day episode. I will talk a little bit about memories of Father's Day while growing up in Chicago. As you know, you would buy a present for your dad. Sometimes it's hard to buy something for, especially him, because usually you would buy him a necktie. That's traditional. Excuse me. And then, or you take him out to dinner, or you could barbecue for him at your home. For my father, he was very unique. When I was growing up, my father was not a talker, and he didn't communicate, you know, with other people or his family. That was a little frustrating. But, you know, my father hardly went to school. He only had a grade school education, probably dropped out, not dropped out, but my grandmother didn't send him to school. He was they were very poor in growing up in Greece, and they worked at their property. So that he regretted that, and I didn't understand why my grandmother did that. I never know. I met her once when I was about 6 years old when I went to Greece in 1970. So my father came to America in 1952. Actually, my grandfather came earlier. He worked here in Chicago, and then he went back and forth. And then when my father came to Chicago, and like I said, in 1952, my grandfather died, so I never met him. And he started working here and there. And there was his first job was at a plant that made SOS pads. And my father told me one day that he hated that job. It was disgusting. He didn't like it at all. So next, the next job he found was a job that he worked to almost the rest of his life. And he was a busboy at the Hilton Hotel, which was then called the Conrad Hilton Hotel, it's still located on Michigan Avenue at 600 South Michigan near Balbo. And he was a busboy, and then he got promoted to waiter, and he worked at room service. And the thing is, me and my brothers were growing up, we hardly saw him because he worked at nights, and he made more money and more tips. And that was when he married my mom and told her about it, and she said she was fine with that. But my mom was alone, so that was hard. And when my mom came to Greece in 1962, when she got married, she didn't know anybody. She was all alone and scared. And that's frightening for her. So my dad, sometimes he was a selfish man, and then but he did take care of us. He put a roof over our heads and put money in the bank and make sure we went to college. He always harped on me every day. You know, it drove me crazy, but I'm glad he did. So he sent me and my two brothers to college, and that made him very happy. And for Father's Day for him, when a present, we always buy him a tie, or sometimes he didn't want a gift. As long as we were there for him, that was his present. And that's very, very touching, very special. And at the Conrad Hilton, he worked there from 1952 to 1984. They were doing renovations, but I think he was forced to retire and with the other employees. He wasn't disappointed by that, but I'm glad he did. And it was weird for him being retired at home, and you see him all the time, because I never hardly did. And he died in January 6, 2006, and that was very sad. He was 91 years old, and he lived a long life, and my family still miss him to this day. But like I said before, he was difficult. You know, most fathers are. Most fathers are wonderful. Most fathers would, you know, when you grow up, you'd take them to baseball games, go fishing, go somewhere. My father never really took me anywhere. He didn't take me to the bathroom. That's how he was. But he did take me where he worked one day, and that was special. You know, he showed me around, showed me the employees, the kitchen, the hotel. I remember one time there was a cotillion a cotillion that it was in 1983, I believe. And it was held there, and my dad arranged to have a hotel room for me to stay because it was very late, and I'm glad he did. It was very nice of him. So my family will still miss him, you know, and, you know, that's my Father's Day story. So I remember one gift I bought him at Carol's Red Hanger Shop. You remember the one that was on State and Randolph, I believe. But this one was located in Fort City, shopping center on the southwest side. And I bought him a tie. And he liked the tie very much. I'm glad. But he'll tell me, don't buy me any more gifts. I have ties. Save your money. Save your money. And I did. But, you know, I felt foolish and weird not buying him a gift. Now, even on his birthday, he didn't want anything. That's how he was. You know, it's very nice. Okay. Right now, I'll be talking about another subject. And this is about Tim Weigel, who was a Chicago broadcaster in Chicago. And a lot of people remembered him. And on Channel 5, Channel 7, and Channel 2. He was on three big channels. I don't know if he was on Channel 32. Maybe. I don't know. Who knows? I don't remember. But I do remember he grew up in Chicago. He grew up in Gurnee. His father was a broadcast announcer. He did voiceovers for commercials. And he founded WCIU TV, which is still on the air on Channel 26, and we call it the U. And I don't know if he, from what I've read on his biography, he attended Yale University. He grew up in Lake Forest, and he was in the same college as Gene Siskel, and he graduated from Yale with a bachelor's degree in history, and then he returned to Chicago, and then he enrolled in Northwestern University. Then his first career was teaching, and he taught in Connecticut, and then he moved to Chicago. Then his broadcasting career started, and he was a college football writer for the Chicago Daily News. And in 1975, he was first on the air in WMAQ on AM on the radio, and then a few months later, he debuted as a sports anchor on Channel 5. And yeah, he was only there for a couple of years, but I remember him vividly. I do remember it. I think it was News Center 5 at the time. If people remember that, that was Jane Pauley and Ron Hunter. Yeah, I remember that. And no, that was very interesting like that. And then he left for Channel 7, WLS. I don't know if he got fired or they offered him a better job. I think that's what happened. So he was on Channel 7. He started in 1977. He was there for a long, long time, long, long time. And what was unique about him, he would wear weird outfits. Like it said, according to the Chicago Tribune, he would wear a tuxedo jacket, a tie, and Bermuda shorts. Now, these days, if people did that today, it's nothing. But back then, it was something. And then he started his, which is well known, was his Weigel Wieners. And let's see. So he did his Weigel Wieners, and they were bloopers from all sports events, baseball, basketball, hockey. They were funny. And then I remember when he started presenting the Weigel Wieners, you would see a hot dog, like a gold trophy. Kind of funny. And I look forward to that, you know. And those bloopers were, you know, they were there until he was stayed till Channel 7. And he was there from, excuse me, from 1977 to December 1994. And then he was fired, and then Mark Giancarlo took over, which, by the way, Mark Giancarlo doesn't work there at Channel 7 anymore. It's like strange. And then he, in 1995, he joined WBBM Channel 2, and he was there for quite a while. Then around 2000 in June, he got sick, and he had a brain tumor, and then he had surgery. And then he had his operation, went through radiation treatments, and then he went back to work. And then about 6 months later, the tumor returned. So he died in June 17, 2001. So he died about 20 years ago, 2 days ago. You know, he's been gone for 20 years. And I remember, you know, I don't know if this was true. There was a rumor that he had a fist fight with somebody on the street. I'm not sure. I read that somewhere. I think somebody got belligerent and tried to pick a fight with him, and he did fight with him. I don't know if this guy was drunk or is someone he knew, but it was a funny story about that. I should have looked that up, you know, to get more information. But, you know, I want to remember him as a good man, good sportscaster. And he had three children. And his son, Rafer Weigel, he's very well known. He was an actor, and then he became a news anchor. No, then he was a sports anchor, then a news anchor. He was in Chicago on Channel 7, then he left for St. Louis, and then he returned to Chicago, and now he's not on the air anymore, but he's still on Facebook and Twitter. I became friends with him a little while ago. He seems like a very nice guy, very nice man. And also there's Jennifer. She talks on the radio. I'm not sure which radio station, but they're wonderful kids, and they carry on the legacy of their father and their grandfather. And it's and also their mother, and which she was on the radio. You know, I'm trying to remember. Yeah, her name was Kathy Worthington, And I remember her on the radio. So that's if we, you know, Tim Weigel is he's well remembered, and we all miss him, you know. But he's one of the few sportscasters that made his mark, and a lot of people remembered him for his colorful, how would I say, his personality. You know, it's great. Okay, the next thing I will talk about is Riverview Park. Now, I'm going to talk about Riverview not in so much detail. I'm just going to talk about the beginning, how the park started and, well, like how it formed. So let's see what we have here. Okay, according to some websites, the area was at Belmont and Western, and it was settled by German immigrants in the late 1880s. And the park was first called Schützen Park, and then, which was in German, but it was first called Sharpshooters Park. And it was like a, I think like a shooting range. So that was very weird, you know, but it was a big area, large area. And then, when they stopped that, they began renting the park for picnics, and it was like a private park. So, you know, people can go by, bring their picnic baskets, their kids, and enjoy the scenery. This is very, you know, sounds lovely at the time, you know. And then they formed an association called the Sharpshooters Association, and that dissolved. And then two of the members purchased the land, and the partners were Wilhelm Schmidt and his partner George Goldman, and they operated the park as a picnic until 1903, when Schmidt's son George was in school in Europe and suggested to his father that they add rides to the ground, and he got that inspiration from some music parks he saw it in Europe. I don't know what part, but his father took his advice, and he loved the idea of it, which is great. Okay, and let's see. And then, so Riverview opened in July. I'm trying to remember what date exact date it opened. So I will tell you in a second. Yes, it opened on July 2nd, 1904. Then, the first roller coaster was called the White Flyer, and it was a figure eight shaped roller coaster. That's one of the first. I'm sure that was the first one. The other one was called the Top. I think that was the first roller coaster. I'm not exactly sure. So I will read about the White Flyer first. So that was one of the first attractions at Riverview. And so that was still, that roller coaster was there for until the early 1920s. So according to some website, it had its first accident after 3 days that it opened, when a 25-year-old man stood up and fell out of his car. So they didn't have seatbelts then. You know, nothing did you strap on, and he suffered a broken leg. So thank goodness for that. And I've seen pictures of it, and it looks real nice. And it says here the last surviving figure eight in the world. It's called the Leap the Dips at Lakemont Park in Altoona, Pennsylvania. So I'm sure right now they have seat belts and safety features, so you won't fall out or get hurt. Thank goodness for that. And then the other attractions were there was, I think, the Aerostat and the Stratostat. And they were there for a long, long time. And it's they started in the early 1900s. And that lasted till probably almost at the end of when the park closed in 1967, which was interesting. A funny thing about it, I made a video about Riverview Park about a couple years ago, and I got permission from the person from the photos, and I will tell you in a moment of who that person is, and also you can buy the book on that, because there are two books out about Riverview Music Park. You can read. I bought one, and I can't stop reading it. I'm so fascinated by it. It's a fascinating read. I wish there was more information. I would love that so much. Anyway, like I said before, I will not go into more detail. I'll talk about some more rides on Riverview Park on later episodes, you know, maybe broken down to roller coasters, merry-go-rounds, other weird attractions. And then when I made the video about Riverview Park about in 2019, I took the photos and I posted them on Facebook and Twitter. I made a gallery of that, and I credited them. And then there were a few attractions that a lot of people were not familiar. One was called the Creation. Now, that one, a lot of people saw that, and they said they didn't believe that it was there, but it was there in the 1910s, but these people weren't born yet. I wasn't born yet. And they're saying, this doesn't exist. This is wrong. I tried to tell people it was there, you know, based on history. But, you know, some people don't listen. I mean, what are you going to do? You try. You really try. You know, I do my best. So, when I posted the photos, and people are still commenting about 2 years later, and they still love it. They still love that. And it's still, Riverview Park is still talked about today. And, you know, it's a funny thing because, a couple of videos it was shown on Channel 9, WGN, which I appreciate very much from everyone. For showing that, and people missed that place so much. And then when it closed in 1967, it replaced by a shopping center. And DeVry Institute of Technology is there on the property, and I went to school there. And I started in spring of 1983 and graduated from May 1986. And I did see, when I went to the police station that was located on Belmont Avenue, there's a plaque there of Riverview Park, and I saw it. And I would like to go back again and see it, you know, see the plaque and walk around the property to feel that, oh, there was the ghosts of Riverview there, which would be fascinating. So, okay, so that'll be all for today. I hope you enjoyed this Father's Day episode. I'm sorry I'm rambling a little bit. I'm still nervous doing every episode. You know, I don't have a voice for radio or podcasts. Just an ordinary guy and doing the fun things on my page on Vanish Chicagoland and on my blog, vanishchicagoland.blog. I will post this episode soon so you can listen in. We'll see. I probably do another episode tomorrow morning. We'll see if I have time. We'll see. Probably not, but we'll see. Probably on Tuesday, I will do another episode. So this is Pete Costanis, and this is Father's Day episode. And this is episode 30, season 2 for Vanished Chicagoland Stories. I'm glad you can join me, and I hope everyone have a wonderful Father's Day tomorrow. So this is bye-bye for now for me, and now it is bye-bye from Ray Rayner, and take it away, Ray.
We have to go. Bye-bye-bye.